ser ético, isto é uma crença.
É uma religião muito grande.
A visão é um culto.
É coragem, que é liberdade, que é crer, que é vontade, que é o caráter das pessoas.
Calma de quem é grande, maior que os maiores.
É uma paixão com a explicação.
Eu não consigo explicar o que é ser do Benfica. Eu sinto o que é ser do Benfica.
É de facto uma paixão. E as paixões são assim, vivem-se assim, intensamente.
Aqui não há nenhuma razão. É paixão, paixão, paixão.
Ser Benfica.
What's going on, everybody? Here we are for our seventh season of the Benfica podcast. My name is Alfredo, and here we are again talking about Benfica. So first podcast of the season, and here I am with Cristiano Oliveira.
What's going on, everybody?
And also with us up north, Dave de Oliveira.
What's going on? Good to be back.
Good. Dave is our stats resident.
Dave, you hear that noise right now? You hear that?
No.
That's everyone running to iTunes to unsubscribe to our podcast since Steve is no longer a part of it. I think you should have saved that for after the podcast, to the end of the podcast. At least people, like right now, everybody's just unclicking, unsubscribing.
Hey, a download is a download. Let's talk about ins and outs. So we'll start with the ins first. And Dave, I'll let you spit out some stats on the guys that we brought in, starting with the goalkeeper.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got Vlachodimos coming in. He's 24 years old, German from Panathinaikos this year. And he cost this 2.4 million euro. And last season in Panathinaikos.
Panathinaikos.
It's all Greek to me.
Yeah.
I would like to see a guy who's a bit more experienced, a guy a bit more mature. And I'm not saying that Vlachodimos, what's his name?
Vlachodimos.
Vlachodimos. I'm not saying that he can't turn out to be that goalkeeper. But right now, all the uncertainty going on with the position at the club over the last year, we'd like to have a guy who's a little bit more established. And maybe he can turn around and surprise us all, but I haven't really studied him much, guys. I got to be honest. I know we had a month off, and that's exactly what I did. I took a month off. I didn't sit there and break down video, and I'll start to do that now, start looking at guys. Because it's one thing going to YouTube and seeing the best of, right? Because when you're looking at the best of, they don't throw in the front.
It's exactly that.
Exactly. It's the best of. They don't throw in the best of. And by the way, here's a frango in there.
I'm sure there's a best of Varela video out there too.
Well, there is, but they don't. Yeah, exactly. They have the best of a Varela, and then there's a Varela every time he comes out for a cross and everybody, you know, chokes. He's not what I anticipated. He's not what I wish Benfica would get, but he's got, if he's not better than Varela, what in the freaking world did we sign this guy for? I mean, if this guy can come in right now, you tell me, if he can't play over Varela right now, what the hell did we sign him for?
To throw this out there, Panathinaikos finished 11th last year. 11th in the Greek league out of 16 teams.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you can't put that all on a goal, Dave. I mean, save that stat and keep it up north.
Yeah, on the other side, with Lisieux retiring, Benfica did bring back one of the left backs that they had on loan, Yuri.
Yuri Ribeiro. 21 years old, Portuguese, returned from loan from Rio Ave. 29 games played last year and scored one goal.
You notice all three of these guys have played 29 games.
Copy paste,
that,
baby.
That was quick on me, baby. Woof.
Now, here's the thing. I know that, Cristiano, you're not sold on him. And maybe I don't know if it's because you haven't seen enough of him or what you've seen of him hasn't really convinced you. With rumors of Grimaldo going out, How do you feel that the left side of the Benfica's defense is served with Ribeiro?
I have absolutely zero problems with the Yuri Ribeiro at Benfica if he's your backup. If he's a starting left back at Benfica with the Almeida starting at right back, I'm not sure it's going to be a good look. I think if you bring in another guy, like they're rumored with this kid Lachal, I can't pronounce his name, from Uruguay. You got the kid Martin from Espanol. They've been rumored to get some good players, and I think if he comes in and he shares some of that early minutes with these guys and between all three, four competitions that Benfica are going to be involved in, he'll be okay. But again, as a backup, I think if he's your starter, I think you're in for a long season. And you have a Luizão on the team that's going to take away those valuable minutes for a kid like Ferro. I'm not even worried about Alema. I'm not even worried about Ruben Dias, because Ruben Dias right now is the undisputed starter. He's going to get his minutes. Jardel, same thing. Conte, I think he's going to force himself into the starting lineup or into at least maybe the third center back right away. where does Luizão fit in? And if you want to tell me, again, you want to keep him around for his veteran leadership, it's fine, but you're taking away an opportunity of a young kid to come up. So that's the problem I have with Luizão right now, especially when you take into account the four guys I just mentioned. You have four guys that any of the four could start on this team.
Cristiano, I don't know if you watch much of UNAM Pumas. To talk a little bit about Castillo, there's a lot of guys out there that downloaded
their app on my iPhone, so I can watch all their games.
There's a lot of guys out there that are pretty big on Castillo, a guy that's very strong. He's stocky. I personally haven't watched a lot of Castillo, so I wouldn't be able to tell you where he would fit in. He's definitely out of the three guys or four guys that we have. He's very different from all of them because. For Ferreira, and we'll get into him in a little bit. He's more technical. This guy's more strength, more of another guy that chases down balls and guys that never give up. But we'll have to see.
Basically, the best way I could put it is he's Raul Jimenez with better finishing feet. Ability. Yeah, better feet, and he's tremendous on free kicks.
The Samaris thing, obviously, a guy that's making quite a bit of coin. And obviously a guy that probably has some market elsewhere.
If you recall, on our very last pod of last season, of the 2017-2018 season, myself, and Steve, and Dave got in on this. We did a sell, loan, keep type of thing. And if you recall back then, I said, it's about time. Like, look, appreciate everything you've done. I love the fact that you bleed Benfica. I love the fact you're a diehard and, you know, you live this day and day. But it's about that time. It's time for you to go. You've had a really tough time at Benfica over the last couple of seasons, getting some playing time and adapting yourself to whatever schemes it was that Rui Vitória changed to. And at this point, your salary, your performance does not warrant your stay here at Benfica. So for that case, I would sell him if it is 10 million, whatever it is I could get. Move him on, and you got a guy like Keaton Parks. Now you got this kid Alpha that came in. You do have other options, younger blood, hungrier blood, to go ahead, you know, to go out there and you know, get a crack at it.
Yeah, Jetson also, another one. Play both defensive absolutely. And box.
So I just mentioned those three because those are, you know, the obvious ones.
Dave De Oliveira is here after a couple weeks absent. Dave,
ciao.
Dave was in Italy. Dave was actually at Cristiano Ronaldo's debut game for Juventus at Chievo.
That's correct. It was a hot day, but if you could see right center field, I had the Portuguese flag out. We were row one, but great game to be at.
You know who else is here?
Cristiano Oliveira.
The original Cristiano. Ciao bella, che cazzo.
Cristiano Oliveira has been absent from the pod for a few weeks now.
Yeah, a little while.
So he's back. I got to be honest. I don't know what kind of Cristiano Oliveira we're getting back. And I'll tell you why. First of all, as a lot of you know, Cristiano was here in the United States. He was part of...
I've been here for the last 30 years, bro.
Well, he was here with Benfica. While Benfica was here, Cristiano was actually part of the team that organized the tournament, the team that was set to take care of Benfica. He was part of that entourage, if you will, from the organizers. And he spent some time or a lot of time, a whole 2 weeks time,
week and a half, whatever it was, yeah.
Very close to the players, to the coaches at training. So I'm not really sure what Cristiano we got back, because he got this newfound admiration for players because he got to know players just outside of the TV screen.
Not just the training hotels. I got to travel with them everywhere they went. I went. I mean, it's hard to put into words. It was one of those experiences that I'm not going to forget anytime soon. Absolute privilege to serve Relevant and at the same time to serve my team, Clube Meu Coração, Benfica, and to be able to mingle and talk and you know and mess around with these guys, guys that you've admired, especially guys like Rui Costa and stuff like that. And now you're having coffee with these guys. It was, you know, one of those spectacular feelings. Very hard to put into words, but I mean, it's something that I hope that I get to do some other time. And until then, I'll be reminiscing about this time that I spent with them. And like I said before, it's hard to put into words, and it'll forever be one of those great memories that I'll always go back to.
So needless to say, now all of a sudden, would you say you have a filter when it comes to talking about players or giving your honest opinion about players?
You or anyone else that knows me really well, knows that there is no filter, at least when it comes to me. Now, do I look at guys differently? Yo, absolutely. You know, now I have a personal relationship with a couple of the guys, and it's pretty neat. It's pretty cool to be able to exchange messages with these guys on a daily basis and stuff like that. Yeah, it's pretty neat. But at the same time, you guys know me. You guys that don't know me on a personal basis, like you do, Alfredo, and some of the guys that are listening, that have, you know, the guys that know me from here on the podcast, as I was saying, you've known me for the last 4 years, whatever the hell it is that I've been here, that I don't have a filter. I've never had a filter, and I'm not about to start having a filter now.
We'll see. And they were really fortunate. They were fortunate because up until that point, even though Benfica didn't completely play them out of the park, they were playing enough and creating enough chances, especially in the second half, to be able to go into the locker room up one, if not two goals. Their goalie, it was their best player, I guess you could say that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of all really is like a really a picture of a mid-table team that comes into side of the loose.
But that's, look, man, see, Alfredo, I love you. I love you. But I don't like that talk, me personally. I don't like that talk coming from you at a mid-table. Like, because at the end of the day, who gives a shit if Sporting is a mid-table team or not, if they play like a mid-table team? At the end of the day, we all know Sporting is not a mid-table team, okay? Sporting is one of the three big clubs in Portugal. We all know.
Well, you don't know that this year.
It doesn't matter about this year. In their history, they're a big team, okay? They're a top three team in Portugal. And anytime a Benfica Sporting, a Porto Sporting, Porto Benfica, whatever the hell it is, right? Anytime those three teams play against each other, you throw away momentum, you throw away
the current form,
you throw away all that stuff because
I get it.
And so it's a derby game. So whether Sporting played like a mid-table team or not, to me, that's irrelevant. Look, they understood that they're not as good as Benfica. You look up and down that roster, Benfica's got a better roster. They understood that their current form, right? They won two games. They struggled to win their two. Credit to them. They came away with, the important thing is to win the games. They won the first two games in the Liga NOS. They knew that they struggled to win those two games. They knew they were going to come up against a very good team in Benfica, a team that was in a different stage of the early season, like you've mentioned before. And they understood that they had to play ugly in order to come away with a result, to come away with a point. And so credit to them, because if it was the other way around, that's why I don't like that whole mid-table team talk, right?
But if
it was Benfica that came away with that, right? Let's switch their shoes here, right? Let's say Sporting is a team that's fighting for the Champions League. Benfica, you know, it's changed coach, had the same things happen. The roster's not as good. We'd be like, you know what? Look, it wasn't the prettiest of soccer, but at least we didn't go on the road and lose to our rivals. So I understand what Sporting had to do. I didn't like the way that they wasted time, towards the end of the second half. But I just think a lot of people coming into this game, right? I got to hang out with Nuno and Baquero and and Serginho and so many guys from Benfica FM and Conversa Benfica. And we're hanging out with all these guys at Mega Bar before, and then we even made the trip. And I'm not going to get involved in here whether you're team Gajas or you're team Mega, right? But I got to hang out with both sets of groups that day. And I think expectations were so high. I think everyone anticipated Benfica was going to come into this game and just demolish Sporting based on form and current form. And I think when that didn't happen, I think people were really let down, because it wasn't the worst of games by Benfica by any stretch. It wasn't a perfect game, but it wasn't the worst game that Benfica's played.
João Félix gets the equalizer in the dying minutes of the game. I'm very happy for João Félix, because we've been following Félix for quite some time. Cristiano and I actually got a chance to hang out with Félix. And I don't think that it couldn't have happened to a more talented, and I don't know the kid personally, right? But it couldn't have happened to a more talented player to be able to get his derby debut as a senior player and to be able to score the equalizing game. In the flash interview, he was asked, what did you feel? And he felt that he had the goosebumps. Fico, I don't even know how to say
it.
Arrepiad. Arrepiad is what he said. And look, when you hear something like that, and you see what these kids that have been with the club, well, he's actually bounced around. But that was, if it was me, that was probably the same feeling that I would have. So you can almost relate to the emotions that are going through this player's mind when he scores a goal, a significant goal in a derby, a goal that ties up the game.
He's the third youngest ever Benfica player to score a goal in a derby. After Shalana was second. I forget who the first one was, but Shalana was second. He was the third youngest. Dave, do you have that stat? Fantastic, and I couldn't be happier for him, man. The kid works hard. He's you know, puts his head down and grinds and does everything he's asked to do. And you're only going to see good things out of this kid in the future, man. I can't wait to see what the future holds for him. Both he and Jetson. I mean, another kid who's only a year older, but another kid that's played so far. Every game he's played this season, he's played the full 90 minutes, and he, you know, seems like you're watching a seasoned veteran. You could tell that there's some aspects of his game that he still needs to develop, but at the same time, to have the cojones to go out there and play these games at such a high level with so much pressure and not really skip a beat. When you see other veterans that come into Benfica, guys that are more established and they feel the weight of the shirt, and these kids are just able to step in there to the starting lineup and really just perform like anybody else on the field. So fantastic job by these kids. And Benfica have two fantastic young players. And trust me, there's many more down at Seychelles, but these two are the ones that are going to stand out more so this year.
The topic of Rui Vitória always tends to come up regardless. But, I mean, we had Dave looked up the stats, and he doesn't have a very good record against Sporting Airport.
Very good. I think you're putting it, you're being polite. I mean, it's a terrible record. How about Dave, that? How about I say that?
What do you got?
Well, against Porto, he still has not beat them in his entire career with or without Benfica. With Benfica, it's 3 losses, 3 draws against Futebol Clube Porto.
In six games.
And against Sporting, it's 2 wins, 4 draws, and 3 losses. And he hasn't beaten Sporting since December 11th of 2016. 4 straight draws after that.
Wow. So that's quite a big, and look, at this point, there's a lot of people grabbing to anything that they can to stay on that Rui Vitória out wagon, if you will. They're picking on this, they're picking on that. I don't think we're not going to spend much time bashing Vitória, because I think that a lot of people,
we've only spent a better part of 3.5 years.
I think a lot of people know how we feel about Vitória, and I think that going on in every podcast that bashing him is pointless, really, because he's the coach, regardless of whether you like it or not, regardless if you like his decisions, you kind of have to support him in a way, right?
It might be pointless in the standards that, you know, nothing's going to happen based on what you say on this podcast. But at the same time, when you look at that record, just like Dave has mentioned, what is it, 2 wins in 15 games or whatever the hell it is against your 2 main rivals? Look, obviously no one's listening to you over there. Any of the decision makers aren't listening to you, but it's something that you do have to bring up. I mean, you can't just overlook 2 victories in 15 matches and be okay with it when that's your direct competition, and then, you know, praise him for beating the Marítimos and the Chaves and the Feirenses of the world. I'm sorry. If that's what you want, listen, but change the channel. Do what you got to do. Switch the YouTube channel, iTunes. Look, I'm not going to sit here and bash the guy when he doesn't deserve it. But at the same time, those are very concerning numbers. And look, and if I wanted to be an even bigger SOB, I would tell Dave to bring up his Champions League stats as a coach.
We'll get there.
They're not fantastic
I have those.
So, again, it's not about bashing the guy. We're not bashing him. Right.
There's facts.
But there's facts that are very alarming, and we have to talk about this.
Well, Chris, let me play devil's advocate, right? So, you know, you play, you don't win, you don't beat, you can't beat Sporting, you can't beat Porto. Those are four games out of what, 38 game season. So that's
38. Come on, man. What's wrong with you?
36.
Minus two is 34.
So that's
34.
So that's roughly 80% of the games that Rui Vitória plays is not against either one. So when you look at it and you say, well, as long as he beats 80% of the other teams or 80% of the games,
agreed.
Then we're in good shape.
I've made that argument since I was a little kid with my friends, especially getting beatdowns from Porto, right? And I would always tell them, look, I will lose the four games against you guys, you know, the two against Sport and two against Porto, as long as I win every single other game.
There's one way to look at it.
Yes. But nowadays, losing those four games, that might be your season anyway. That's 12 points. I mean, the other opposition, your main rival, might not drop 12 points. So that could be devastating as well. Look, thing is, I don't know why you guys are laughing. Thing is, it's not good. What else can I say? It's not good. And at some point, right, you have to really look at this and start worrying about it, because is it, I mean, we've read so much and we've heard so many different theories with this, but fact of the matter is, two wins in 15 matches against your two main rivals. Fact of the matter is that it's one thing not to be in control of a game and to own the game, right? In mandar no jogo, when you're at the Dragão or at Alvalade, but when you're at home and you can't, you know, control the game at home, come on, dude. I mean,
what did Gabriel do at La Liga? This is a guy that went to Juventus as a junior, then moved around a couple times and ended up at Leganés, and it looked like he really blew up at Leganés in La Liga.
Yeah, he's been there for a couple of years now, played 63 games in La Liga, has 10 goals, one from the PK spot and another from a set-piece free kick. And he's also has four assists in his time in La Liga.
Yeah. So to me, from what I know and what I've read of Gabriel, I think this is going to be a key part of this team. But when you look at all the center midfielders that we have, I'm a little bit concerned that, you know, if he does get a start, certainly he's not going to sit Pizzi. Unless
no,
he moves Pizzi to the right.
No, he's not going to sit Pizzi. And to be brutally honest with you, and pay attention to what I'm saying, because I'm not knocking anyone here, right? But I would love to see a Feja and Pizzi and a Gabriel. That means taking out Jessen. But at this point, I don't think you could take out Jessen. The kid's been spectacular. And the one thing I like about Gabriel is that not only could he, you know, he's very good with shots from the outside of the box, which would be a different weapon that Benfica could use, you know, from an attacking standpoint. And I think he's very good at that with his left foot. But I think he's also very good with the long ball in springing the Salvis of the world and even the Servis when Servis on the pitch or mm-hmm. whomever's on the wings. I think he's very good at that, you know, with that long ball. So I think it'll be very exciting. But at this point, I just don't see them taking out Jetson, and not that they should. I think the kids have been spectacular, you know, man of the match against Sporting and man of the match, I believe, the game before. I think he got the man of the match as well. I mean,
he's been outstanding.
He's been more than we ever anticipated. So yeah, you can't take him out. So that leaves Pizzi, because, I mean, you're not going to take out Fisher.
11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time if you're in the East Coast of the United States. 4 p.m. if you're in Portugal.
And you know who's going to be over there in Monaco?
Leonardo Jardim.
Him too. But you know he's going to be there for the draw.
Rui Costa.
I'm pretty sure he'll be there. You know who else?
A tua prima.
Minha prima, não sei. Minha prima não disse nada disso. Mas o nosso amigo. Patrick Kendrick. Patrick Kendrick will be there on behalf of Inter Milan with the Inter Milan's TV crew, media setup people, and he's very excited. He hopes that Benfica and Inter Milan come up in the same pot because he wants to make the trip to Lisboa. So very excited for Patrick and Benfica as well. But it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow.
I hate to jump back and forth, but Cristiano, talking about positions,
I like him better on their back.
Is the goalkeeper position done?
Fantastic. Listen.
This is a buried issue.
We had
I like them on their back.
We had we had a lot of, you know, nervousness and some doubts about Blakademos, the Greek goddess.
You say Block or Vlock?
I don't know. Blakademos, whatever. You know, the Greek, Odysseus, whatever his name is, Odysseus. Cool guy. Cool
Odysseus.
Guy. Very nice guy. Still American to me. Odysseus Blakademos. And we had some reservations with him. But you know what? I think over the last couple of games, he's proven to us that this year, Benfica, aguarda reds. And I think today we should tip our caps to him because he had a very good performance. And I think he delivers a different confidence for our defenders. I think his composure and his calmness, I think that this year, the guys know they have a goalkeeper back there, and he made some important saves today. Things could have gotten ugly, but you know what? He stepped up. None of them, except with the exception of that one reflection off a header, he was spectacular, but none of the save was like out of this world. But you know what? He's making the casual saves. He's making all the saves he needs to save. He needs to make. And
feet, not bad.
We couldn't say the same for our goalkeeper last year. So that brings a lot of confidence to his back four and to the rest of the team. So very excited for him. This is a guy that I think the team, whoever was scouting, whoever is doing their job and brought him in, I think that they hit a home run with this guy.
Rui Vitória was asked today about Ferreira and Seferovic, and I think that his answer is pretty indicative of where his head is at, that they need a physical player, they need a guy that's going to hold up the ball, and Ferreira certainly isn't that guy. So... I think that, you know, he's going to give chances to Seferovic. And look, Sef, to his credit, Seferovic had a very good month last August and a very good middle of September. So maybe we catch him just right. After that, he just disappeared.
That's what I'm hoping for. Like I said on a previous podcast, I bought his jersey last August, so I'm still hoping to get a return on that.
Nunca mais aprende, pa.
We shall see in less than a little bit, the less than 24 hours. A game at the Stade de Luz. Hopefully, it'll be a sold-out Stade de Luz. Benfica need to break this egg against the German competition, in particular Bayern Munich. You know, zero wins and eight matchups, eight games, eight previous games is not a good record. And I think Rui Vitória needs to come out tomorrow and try to win this game. And again, look, at the end of the day, if Benfica lose to Bayern Munich, it's not the end of the world. Bayern Munich is one of the top four or five teams in the world. But at least I would like to see Benfica represent themselves well and come out and play good football, play at home, and obviously playing at home and meaning business and proving to the world that they're out there to win this game.
Yeah. As Cristiano mentioned, they're perfect in the Bundesliga with the 3-0 start this early on. But they do have some injuries, Dave.
Yes, they do. Quite a bit, actually. And starting at the back, they've got Hummels out with the Achilles injury. Rafinha just picked up an ankle injury over the weekend. Corentin just tore his ACL also over the weekend. Goretzka. Goretzka, there we go. His foot, he's doubtful for tomorrow. Coleman's out with an ankle injury. Ribery's got a stomach flu, it seems like. And Thiago Alcantara actually just picked up an injury in training today, so he might be doubtful for tomorrow as well.
I did not know about Thiago Alcantara.
They still have plenty of other weapons, though, yeah. Okay? They're do not deep. Fear. And they do have a guy who is making his return to his beloved home, Stade de Luz, by the name of Renato Sanches, who I believe will most likely be in the starting lineup tomorrow. Now more so with Corentin Tolisso also picking up an injury. That's another spot that he's going to have to fill. Thiago is out. So those are two guys that play similar positions to him in the center of the midfield that are out. So I do think he will play tomorrow. It's going to be very exciting to see him back at Stade de Luz. Hopefully he gets his confidence. But, you know, take it easy on Benfica tomorrow, Renato. Please, please. I don't want you going all out 2016 Renato Sanches at Stade de Luz just yet.
Yeah, on his presser, Vitória did say that the team is going to remain true. So we're most likely won't see a Benfica team to change from what we have seen the 4-3-3, Chris, to accommodate or to defend against this Bayern team. He did say that we were going to respect the team, but we were going to go in a game in our stadium and with the ambition to win this game. So Rui Vitória staying true
So we don't really anticipate many changes. What do you anticipate as far as starting 11?
I'll say this. I said it a couple minutes ago, and I'll say it again, right? Losing to a Bayern Munich is not the end of the world. It's not the equivalent of losing to, you know, Rio Ave at home or something like that, right? Or Roca or, no, Tondela last year, right? It's nothing at that caliber. But that being said, based on the performance of Benfica last season in the Champions League, which is the worst in the history of Portuguese club in the competition, Benfica has that extra pressure of having to come out and at least get a draw out of this game. Even though they're playing one of the big sharks, you have to represent yourself well. After last season, Rui Vitória's got tons of pressure on him. He's only, you know, has a hand, not even a handful. I mean, two victories in 15 games against his main rivals, Porto and Sporting. The terrible Champions League record from last season. They have to put their right foot forward, and they have to come out tomorrow, and they have to play a good game, and they have to prove to the world that they're not the team that they were last season that just embarrassed themselves and embarrassed the Portuguese league along the way. So I don't see them making that many changes. The only difference is, does a Gabriel get a start in for a Jetson or a Pizzi? Does he want to really throw him out to the Wolves already in order to get him some extra minutes in a competition that Benfica probably is not taking that seriously? That's the other question I have is, will Benfica take this competition seriously this season, or will they prioritize the Liga NOS as they did last season? I mean, you mentioned before, Jonas is not on the injury report, and he's not on the list of convocados. So, is he healthy? Is he not healthy? I mean, what's the question? And now, if he is healthy, why is he being left off the list? As we saw last year in the Champions League, he was left off pretty much of every game. He didn't play, with the exception, I think, or two. I know he played one in the Champions League last year, for sure. Benfica didn't prioritize that competition. Yeah. Are they going to do that again this year? To me, that's the million-dollar question.
I don't know if it's so much a prioritization or if at one point it just got away from them. I think that after that Basel game, I think that it got away from them. I don't know if it was something that, because look, when you look at the group, you have to look at the group and say, this group is very accessible to us. I'm talking about the group last year.
You got a
Basel team. You got, who else did you?
CSK Moscow or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, the group was very...
It was one of those Moscow teams.
Yeah, was very accessible to Benfica, but I just think that it got away from Benfica, and at one point it was too late and too much of a fight to come back and to even qualify. Obviously, we didn't expect the very poor and disgraceful, if I may add, at least for me, of losing all six games in the group stages, but nonetheless, I think that it got away from them. I don't think that the priority was always the league. At one point, it might have been changed or shifted, but I don't think that Benfica entered that competition with that intention. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, we have a lot to prove. I think this team has a lot to prove to their fan base after last year's performance, and I think that this is a group, again, that it's balanced. Obviously, we expect Bayern to win the group easily, and I think that this is going to be a battle between us and Ajax, and we're going to have to get the result against AEK, and then Ajax that's going to be our battle. It's going to be with us and Ajax.
Look, the one confidence that I have going into this Champions League is that, okay, they start off with the big shark in Bayern Munich, then they have an opportunity to get. Well, then they play Ajax, obviously. And then they have an opportunity to get 6 points on back-to-back games against AEK Athens. It's not going to be a walk in the park, but still, if you give me the opportunity, or give me the choice, I should say, between facing an Ajax back-to-back games or Bayern Munich, I'd rather play AEK in back-to-back games. And I think that affords Benfica the opportunity to maybe come away with 6 points and put the pressure on Ajax, who I think has a really good team. They have a bunch of young players just like Benfica do, and then veterans sprinkled in amongst the youngsters. But their youngsters are lights out, man. These guys are players that are going to be playing in the big clubs in the near future, in the Barcelona's, Real Madrid's, Manchester City's, Man United's, as early as next summer. So very much... very talented players, a lot of talent on this team. And so it's not going to be walking the park. But again, as I mentioned, I like the fact that Benfica plays AEK in the middle games.
No, it's Ajax. They play IAK next. And then they...
I don't know what the hell I was looking at. Then just disregard everything I just said.
No, but, you know, but you're right. You know,
I thought, wow, I don't know what I was looking at.
But the Ajax...
I'm going back to sleep.
Well, you're right. But, you know, the opportunity that we have to play Ajax on basically a home and away format, which is really what it is, it gives us the opportunity to really set ourselves up for the final stages or the second half of this group stages fight. We close out with AAK at home after we play Bayern in Germany.
The sad thing is I posted this on Twitter and I still get it wrong. I still get it wrong.
That's all right.
I go to tell you where the hell my head is.
At least you get the name of the team right.
Yeah. Fernando Santos' old team. IEK.
Yeah, so that's
got
what
to
it
watch
is.
Them play in the Marlboro Cup.
I think that that there's a lot of anticipation by Benfica fans for this Champions League, especially after the year we had last year, as I mentioned.
Confesso que quando eu entrei, eu costumo dizer que pressão a gente sente quando tem 65 mil pessoas nos empurrando, nos apoiando. Mas hoje, quando eu entrei com a minha família por aquela porta, a última vez que entro como jogador, olhei para essa bancada e vi toda a bancada vazia, agora eu entendi realmente o que é uma pressão. Eu não sei muito bem do meu sentimento agora, mas eu sei de que amanhã eu já não vou ter nada disso, né? Eu vou acordar. Já não vou tomar o pequeno almoço no Seixal com os meus companheiros. Já não vou me equipar no balneário, colocar aquela roupa e ir ao campo treinar. Como se fosse o primeiro dia da minha vida. Mas eu sei que a partir de amanhã começa uma nova carreira. Então eu gostaria de parar agora, agradecer a Deus, primeiramente. Agradecer a todos, sem exceção, a todos mesmo, até aos meus rivais que me fizeram crescer dentro de campo, como eu disse, sem exceção alguma. E eu me orgulho de tudo que a minha vida, que ao longo da minha vida, Deus me deu. Desde a infância humilde, onde meus pais estão aqui, que a gente morava do lado de uma tuia de café, e ele sabe bem disso, até os primeiros toques na bola com meu pai na escolinha de futebol com 5 anos, que o primeiro dia na escolinha era só o treinador e o possível jogador de futebol, até quando eu cheguei nesse clube, me tornei homem e me tornei um atleta. Não é fácil. Tudo aquilo, eu sempre recompensei tudo aquilo que me deram dentro de campo. Eu devo quase tudo ao presidente Luiz Felipe Vieira, devo quase tudo ao Benfica, devo quase tudo à minha esposa e às minhas filhas. E por falar na esposa e filhas, que três mulheres fortes que eu tenho em casa, porque eu sou o que fico mais derrubado lá com essa cobrança do dia a dia e eles são quem me joga para cima. Eu, como eu disse, fugindo um pouco agora aqui no raciocínio devido ao nervosismo, eu correspondi a tudo que me deram dentro de campo e agora eu faço de tudo para corresponder e defender esse clube da minha melhor maneira, com garra, com amor, com dedicação, por onde quer que eu leve o nome Benfica, porque é isso que eu aprendi nessa casa. Foi assim no passado e será assim no futuro. Eu olho para todo lado e eu vejo, obrigado capitão, mas eu creio que chegou a hora de eu falar, obrigado Benfica, do fundo do meu coração.
538 games, 46 goals, 20 titles, of which 6 league titles, 3 Portuguese Cups, 4 Super Cups, 7 League Cups. Out of those 538 games, 414 was wearing the armband. Luizão puts a period on his Benfica career today, announced his 15-year career came to an end today. But we'll get to that in a little bit. My name is Alfredo. I'm here with Cristiano Oliveira.
What's up, man? How you guys doing today?
And Dave De Oliveira, who's in Canada.
How's it going? Great to be back here tonight, boys.
Right. And this is the Talking to the Doll Benfica podcast, episode number 295. On tap today, we'll recap the Bayern game. We'll also recap the Desportivo de Zaves game. And we'll look ahead to Chaves. N-I-E-K. But before that, we will talk a little bit about Luizão. Cristiano, no doubt, a club legend.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing I could really add to that, but besides the fact that, you know, give the guy his praise. He's been at this club for 15 years, 16 really, stopped midway through his 16th. So 15 in a couple months, whatever it may be. But this is a guy that warrants respect from all the Benfiquistas and not just Benfiquistas, but soccer fans in Portugal and around the world. This guy is a committed captain. Yes, he had some hiccups along the way, some things you could criticize along the way, but nonetheless spent a tremendous amount of time at Benfica, a guy that warrants respect from, again, as I said, the fans, and most importantly, his club. And unfortunately, that was not the case today, in my humble opinion. I thought Benfica let him down. I thought Benfica let down the fans. I thought it was total lack of respect for a guy who is going down as an all-time appearance guy, a capitão, a guy that brought back the Mística to Benfica, a guy that was there for some rough times, but then again, turn it around. 6 campeonatos, a guy who is the most titled Benfica in the history of the storied club. And I thought today they did him a disservice. I thought today was an absolute embarrassment that they retired his jersey, which is very nice of them. Nice little ceremony, but nobody got to watch it in live and in person. I thought Benfica let him down. I thought Benfica, the club, should have allowed fans to get in for free, pack the stadium, get as many butts in those seats as possible to really show their appreciation for what this guy has meant to the club over the last 15 plus seasons. I thought it was a total disservice. I thought it was, again, slap in the face to Luizão. And not just to Luizão, but most importantly to the fans, to the guys that have supported this club for, you know, through good times and through bad times. And I thought all around, I thought it was just embarrassing. It was really embarrassing to see what my club did to a legend and what my club did to its supporters on a special day like today, a day that should have been a day to commemorate and appreciate everything that this guy's done for the club. And he should have heard his last cheers and applauses from the Benfica faithful. And that was not the case today. So to me, it was just, I mean, the only thing I can think of is embarrassing. I was really embarrassed today for my club. There's been very few times where I've been embarrassed to be a Benfica fan. And today, unfortunately, I know some of you will not like this, but today I was embarrassed. Today I thought they could have done much better. I thought this club was a much classier club than what they showed today. And I thought Luizão did not get the right send-off that he deserved.
Yeah, here's the thing, Chris, and I'll play devil's advocate. And, of course, I don't know the story. We don't know the story behind it. It was sudden. It was publicized on the newspapers yesterday that Luizão might be rescinding his contract and retiring. And then today the official word came. But here's the thing. I do agree with you that this should have been a ceremony where the fans that have supported Luizão through thick and thin throughout his 15-year career could have had one last chance to say goodbye and to show their praise for him. But here's the thing. How do you know that this was the way the player wanted? We don't know that.
We don't. And I'm assuming that this was on the club. I'm assuming this is not his request. And again, if you go based on his speech, on what he said, on his goodbye letter to the fans, to the people that were watching on TV, he did say it's about the torcedores, it's about the fans. And so I would like to think that a guy that feels like that about the fans, and any player loves to get applause, loves to get the love from the fans, loves to get showered with nice things And in particular, in his last day as a member of the club, I would like to think that was not the case. I would like to think that this came from up above, that this came from the club, and it wasn't a request from Luizão. Again, today should have been a day to celebrate. Today should have been a day to give this guy his last send-off, to give him the love that he so deserves, to thank the guy for what he's done for the last 15 and a half years. I thought they could have done better. And even if it was a request from Luizão, I think the club should have done better, and the club should have stepped in and said, no. Capitão, you deserve the love. You deserve to be showered for what you've done. You're going to go down in the history books of this club. You should have a bust in the museum. You're a guy that's going to be linked to this club for the rest of this club's history. You're going to be an icon of this club. You deserve the right send-off, and that's not the case. And, you know, and then you couple that with, you know, Eliseu disappearing. A guy that's meant so much to the club. I'm not going to tell you he's going to go down in the record books. He's going to be one of these guys with the Mística that you're going to remember forever. But what you're going to remember Eliseu for the most is the celebrations off the pitch after that Taça de Portugal game and tremendous celebration. And then also the Campeonato when he's in his Vespa and he's going crazy. That's what you're going to remember him for. But again, not even a goodbye. Yeah. Not even a thank you, sayonara. Yeah. Epa, nothing. Puta pé no cu. Nothing. I mean, it's embarrassing. So when you see all that, you know, and you combine it with this again, you make a good question. You know, you pose a good question about whether, you know, was this a request from the player or not? When you start thinking about what's happened to the club over the last couple of seasons and you start thinking about things that they could have done for other players and things that they haven't done, to me, it came down from the club. It had nothing to do with the player.
Yeah, the thing that I found the oddest to me is that this all seemed very, very rushed. You know, again, not knowing what the player's wishes were, the player Luizão may have said, you know, I want an impromptu ceremony with just my teammates, some of the people that have supported me throughout my career, members of the staff, members of the structure. We don't know if that was the request, but to me, it just sounds very, very rushed.
I think what it came down to, Alfredo, was if we've seen over the last couple of weeks where we saw the posts on Instagram and he's talking about treinos não convocados and all the stuff that's been going on behind the scenes. I think, and again, this is my best guess, guys. I think that Luizão is a guy that's in his late 30s, a guy that's sacrificing his body and his time with his family, and a guy that's pretty much accomplished everything he wanted to accomplish. I mean, with the exception of the European titles, I mean, figure the guy's accomplished everything. He's a legend, regardless if he sits on the bench for the rest of the year or he retires today. And I think it came down to a conversation with the coaching staff, and they told him, look, right now we have four other guys, you know, Jardel, Diaz, Conti, Lema. We have those guys that are ahead of you right now. We could even bring up, you know, a Ferro, and we could play Samadis at that position if we even need to in an emergency situation. Right now, the only way you're going to get any minutes, Luizão, is if we have some drastic injuries. And, you know, that's going to be last resort. You're going to be the guy that we're going to look to. And I think he came down to a decision, a Luizão decision, that it wasn't worthy or wasn't worth it to sacrifice his body and sacrifice the time with his family. I think that's why it came down so quickly. I think it was a conversation that just happened recently. Luizão was asking, what the hell do I have to do to play? And the coaching staff told him, right now, you're way behind in the pecking order. And that's why this decision was made so, like as you mentioned, rushed. It seems like it was a rushed decision. But to me, that's all it came down to. To me, it's about that conversation that was had. And Luizão, obviously not being happy about it, still had to go out, you know, with his head held high and with respect for the organization.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we all agreed that Luizão is a consummate professional. And I think that at his age and at his level of maturity and wise, if you will, I think that he saw that it was time, right? It was time. He felt that he could give a little bit more to the team. But as Cristiano mentions, at the junction that he is, and putting his body through the rigorous training of a professional football player, I think that it takes a toll. And then you also have, you know, you're putting all this work and you don't get to play. You was hoping that maybe in the Taça de Liga you could get some minutes, but as it turns out, you know, didn't go through. Rubén Dias was probably thought that he was going to leave, that there was going to be a good offer making Luizão, giving him more chances to play, but it wasn't so. So it is what it is. I think that there's probably not one Benfica fan that's not grateful for the service that Luizão has done to this club. As Chris mentioned, I think the only thing that's missing from his resume is a European title.
I mean, look, you can make the argument, and some of my friends have made the argument to me today, that the guy should have retired 3 years ago. But that's besides the point. What I'm talking about is the send-off by the club, not whether he was able to play at the level that he once did. To me, it's about the way they sent him off, and I thought that he deserved more. And I thought Benfiquistas should have had the opportunity to go say their last goodbyes to a guy who's got a legendary career at the club.
No, absolutely. The club legend, and Chris, if it was a Benfica Hall of Fame, he would definitely be in the Hall of Fame, right?
I've made the point here on the podcast on various times that I thought that they should do something. He should absolutely be in the museum somewhere. They have a bust. Like the Hall of Fame here you see in you know, NFL and stuff like that. And
are they
MLB
really
where they put busts? I think they should have a bust of a Luizão in the Cosmo de Mion, because the guy means that much to the club.
Are they really retiring the number four?
I didn't hear that. I saw that there was his number. They hung it up, but I don't think they're retiring the number four. Wait, you heard something like that?
No. I hadn't heard it, but because you had mentioned it, I thought maybe you'd read it elsewhere.
I mentioned what?
That they were retiring the number four jersey.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Yeah, you said it. Dave, you heard it, right?
Dave didn't want to get involved. Dave said, "You guys fight amongst yourselves. I'm out." No, I never said they're retiring the numbers. I said they should have a bust in a museum.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, but it is. I do hope that Luizão remains connected to the club. I think that his level of professionalism, his understanding of the Benfiquismo, and his feeling of the Benfiquismo is a lot of that he could add. I saw a tweet by CJ earlier on, maybe a couple hours ago, in which he thanks Luizão for welcoming him that first day that he was there and encouraging him. So, you know, he's an example to all players that want to be professionals, both at a junior level as well as somebody that's just trying to get into the club. Benfica allowed a goal 10 minutes in, and then they reacted quite well in the second half. They pressed, in the first half, the rest of the first half, they pressed high and they had a couple opportunities. But, Bayern came out of the locker room and got the 2-0, a goal that was scored by Renato Sanches. So Renato Sanches scored. He apologized. People clapped.
They clapped. They gave him a standing ovation.
Standing ovation. So it wasn't just a clap.
They gave him a standing ovation, like the guy just saved the child's life, you know, saved the child from drowning.
And it's not like it was a spectacular goal like Ronaldo in Turin, right?
Yeah, that's one, you know, for the record books, or at least for the memory books.
Yeah,
I should say.
But that is kind of divided. This support for Renato Sanches. And look, I get it. I get the support. I don't understand the standing O. I really don't. The kid is a Benfica product, but his contribution to Benfica is very minimal compared to some other guys on this roster. I don't get it. And I think that, quite frankly, I think that football has gone from a spectator sport to an attendance sport, right? Where before the people that went to the games were guys that felt the team, that were passionate about the sport. Now we got guys that are in gals that go to the game, and you see people taking selfies all the time. It's fashionable to be at the football game, and I think that when you have that type of a crowd, it loses some of the passion. And I think that if you have a different type of crowd, maybe if it was maybe 10 years ago, I think that there's very few in Estádio da Luz that stand up and give the kid a standing O.
I'm not saying you're right or you're wrong. I just think that everybody has a different way of going to the games and reasons to go to the games and watching the games, how they go about it. The one thing I don't understand is you clapped, gave someone a standing ovation that just scored on you.
Against your team.
You put it out of reach.
Where is your pride?
Like, okay, fine, clap. And again, you do whatever the hell you want. Clap, you know, give the guy a massage. Do what you want after the game. Yeah. Not when he just basically put your game, put the game out of reach and said, you know what, we're going to put a nail on it. And like, there's no way you're going to get a point out of this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to me, like, again, I'm not trying to insult anyone. I don't want anyone to feel insulted because you have the right to do whatever the hell you want. You paid for your ticket. But it's just, where's your pride in your team? I understand you have pride that this kid came from Seychelles. He represented the club for 7-8 months, whatever it was at the main level with the 18. Won a championship, went nuts celebrating that said championship. It was fantastic. Something you're gonna remember right along with the Eliseo riding his motorcycle. You're gonna remember moments like that for the rest of your life. But again, after the game, I don't have a problem. I mean, I was ecstatic for the kid that he had a good game. I was ecstatic that game gave him confidence. He played again today, and apparently he had a really good game for Bayern Munich in a game that Bayern Munich drew against a shitty team from the Bundesliga. So if you're telling me that you're happy that the guy had a good game, I'd agree with you 1,000%. He needed a moment like that. He needed that Carino from the fans. He needed to come back to the Louvre and feel what it's like to be a applauded again. But after the game, not when he just scored on you. I mean, think about this. He just put the game out of reach, and you're clapping because he put his hands together, and then just two minutes later, if you go back and watch the game, when one of his former teammates tries to get the ball from on a throw-in or a foul, whatever it was, he throws the ball away like, asshole, like, I don't know, you're not my teammate no more, but you're going to clap that guy. I mean, come on, dude. I have a little more common sense. Yeah. Clap for the guy, do what you want. Buy his jersey, go out with him, hang out with him, do his dreads, do what you want to do, but not during the freaking game.
BaficaPodcast.com is where you can find us on the web. Thank you very much for checking us out. And thanks once again for all your support. And Carrega Benfica. Later.